glad you're here. Fellowship's sweeter knowing you're near. It's so good to see you. I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you.
Welcome to Mark and Friends for Thursday, November 2nd, 2023. I'm Donna Leland. We pick up where we left off last week as we hear the story of Kim Witsack, who sought to make sense of her husband Woody's death. He was prescribed Zoloft and began to experience horrific side effects that eventually led him to take his own life. Kim then became an accidental advocate and, along with her sister's husband, began a two-decade-long journey, of which it still continues, to bring awareness to the collusion between the pharmaceutical companies and government agencies. She testified on Capitol Hill and won the battle to have a black box suicide warning label placed on drug packaging for antidepressant drugs, warning of those side effects. Kim continues her story, where her brother-in-law began to search for answers.
Eric, my brother-in-law, something didn't make sense to him. He went home that night and Googled Zoloft and suicide and found that the FDA had hearings on antidepressant when it was just Prozac in the market and the emergence of violence and suicide in 1991. You know, I look back and thank God for my brother-in-law, who is really, really, really a big piece of this whole puzzle as well. Thinking back to August 6, 2003, the life that I knew and loved came crashing down.
So they were sitting on this information from the 90s into the early 2000s, and they weren't warning anyone?
Yes, they knew about the information in 1991. There was FDA advisory committees that, and they had a lot of people that were public hearings that eventually I was involved in 2004 and 2006 that were almost the exact same story that Woody was talking about when it was just Prozac on the market. All of the members on that committee took funding from pharmaceutical companies making antidepressants. The FDA, so they voted, nope, we don't see any association between the emergence of violence and suicide and the drugs. The FDA told Eli Lilly, the manufacturer of Prozac, to study suicidality. They never did, and the FDA never followed up with them. And meanwhile, here comes Zoloft, another one of the antidepressants, and Paxil, another one, and approval for children, all during the time before Woody's death in 2003.
Kim, could you describe your part in bringing awareness to finally getting this black box warning label placed on these drugs?
Oh, so in the deepest part of me, I knew that it didn't make sense that Woody, you know, would take his own life. And I think back to, you know, that experience of sitting on that kitchen floor when he kept telling me his head's outside his body. And so, you know, all of that just sat in this deep part of me intuitively that something isn't right. Little did I know, again, what my brother-in-law was starting to pull together. Eventually, he came to me and he said, I think I figured out what happened to Woody. That really became when he started presenting me things. God gave him, like, he started writing to people who wrote these books. Like, there were books called the, you know, Prozac, Talking Back to Prozac, the Antidepressant Fact Book, like all of these things that I had no idea even existed because I didn't even really know that Woody was taking, you know, an antidepressant. Like, I knew nothing about these drugs. Eventually, like, as I said, Eric came to me and showed me things. I'm like, oh my gosh, this must be what's going on. I'm like, we got to do something. You know, that's what we did. We went out to Washington, D.C., and we were going to make sure everybody knew about this. Because if it can happen to somebody like Woody, it can happen, you know, to others. And we wanted to do what we could. Eric and I started going, you know, back and forth to Washington, D.C., and meeting with members of Congress and the FDA. Had a big lawsuit against Pfizer. We, you know, told Woody's story in the media. and all of the other people. And you know, the funny thing is, it wasn't just Woody. So all of these families that I met whose kids or loved ones were very similar, like to Woody, were given an antidepressant for a test anxiety. They had just graduated from college and were stressed out. Somebody else got it for a breakup and died within, took their own lives, hung themselves within a few days to a couple weeks to a month after starting antidepressants. So these families, we bonded like nobody else because we could all feel each other's pain. Faith for a lot of us had to be what we held on to because our loved ones had passed and died at the hands of something that somebody somewhere knew about it and kept it from people. And eventually, we were able to get black box suicide warnings added to antidepressants for kids in 2004, young adults up to age 24 in 2006. And to this day, there still is no warning for all ages. Through my lawsuit I had against Pfizer, which, you know, even that story was God's hand all the way through that brought us to the right lawyers out in California who had the same mission that we did. Because I said, it's not about money. It's about getting the truth out and doing something so that no other family has to learn the hard way like Woody did. So the law firm that we worked with was able to get all of these documents out from under seal that weren't discovered in my lawsuit per se, but the judge, and they were even nervous with the judge because we got the chief justice for the Minnesota federal court. They were nervous, you know, would this be a good, favorable judge? And in the end, he was an amazing judge who saw right through all the documents that Pfizer for and the FDA for many, many years had argued those were trade secrets. This judge released them into public domain. So I was able to use these binders worth of documents, internal documents that showed all ages were at risk, that they knew back in the 80s during their clinical trials. The FDA, even in their documents, acknowledged the lack of efficacy, but it was during the AIDS crisis and all the pressure that the public was putting on the FDA for not approving drugs fast enough. All of that became part of my, in some ways, my arsenal, or gave me knowing that I had, because a lot of times it was just my word. Oh, like that's just Woody's story. We were told by the FDA when we actually met with them and other families that, oh, these are just anecdotes. Oh, they're just anecdotes because they didn't happen in the clinical trials. No, when you actually take the stories and then you combine them with documents that show that they knew what happened and that this was a possibility, it was really the game changer and I think helped to push for these warnings. And so that was in 2006. And at that time, I thought, oh, good, God, I'm done. I'm done. I did my part. We got the warning. Let me just go on with my life. And what I quickly realized is that it wasn't just an isolated issue with our antidepressants. It was really our whole, you know, system of pharmaceuticals and drug safety and how harms often get hidden from the public. And yet, you and I, the average person, we trust. That has been my work 20 years later. I'm still doing this work and I speak, and I've been brought on an adventure that I can't even like it. Sometimes I, you know, that song, How Did I Get Here? How did I get here? Seriously, God, how did I get here? Like, this is the most bizarre life. I never chose this, but you have brought me and opened doors that I can't even imagine and are only because of following, you know, what I knew was this something that was drawing me forward and telling me that this is the purpose of your life. And it'll get me all teary. Maybe it had to be somebody like Woody who did not have depression, did not have all of the things. The only thing he had in his system was an antidepressant. It had to be somebody like Woody, so it could show and combine with the person like me and Eric that took it on to actually go and get this work done.
I'm so glad you have that comfort, Kim, knowing that Woody's death was not in vain. Walk us through now the timeline of Woody's death until the warning was placed on the boxes. What did that look like for your life?
Sure. So in obviously Woody died in 2003. 2004 started, you know, I had a big lawsuit against Pfizer that started then. It was also at the time when we were going out to DC. I've been out there probably 40 times by the time, you know, and by 2010. So we were going out there all the time. The FDA held hearings. We helped work with members of the House Energy and Commerce investigation, looking into the financial connections between academic institutions at the FDA and the pharmaceutical companies around antidepressants and the withholding of information that internal people at the FDA had known about it, but the bosses, the people at the top, would not let them come forward with this information. So that's happening in 2004, 2005, 2006. They were looking at adults, and since at that point the FDA was not allowing anybody who had different information, experts around the world that I now work with, that again, I go back to only God could open that door when Eric sent a little email to somebody famous over in Europe and immediately wrote back. And it made me just realize when you're supposed to be where you're supposed to be, things happen. So they were not able to testify at the FDA to do with the warnings for adults. So we ended up hosting a press event at the National Press Club the day before the antidepressant hearings from the FDA, where we would let the experts who the public and the media were not going to be able to hear from. And so we held a four-hour press conference at the day before for the media, and it was an opportunity for them to come. So that was big. Then during this time was also, you know, there were other drug safety disasters like Vioxx. Mm. And so I started connecting with the people working on Vioxx and Avandia and the consumer groups, and really were using, again, Woody's story and all of the antidepressants and how that connected with the Vioxx and the Avandia. And basically it was the same mechanism where, you know, they were hiding things from the clinical trials. From there, and a lot of this stuff came out through litigation. So that was during, you know, the 2000s or late to, you know, 2010, 11. And so I was able to, you know, start attending conferences and met people, invited to come speak. And at this point now, I testified before the U.S. Senate, where it was Ted Kennedy, and both Obama and Hillary Clinton were both senators at the time on that committee. As a result of that U.S. Senate hearing, I was invited to be a consumer representative on one of the FDA advisory committees that analyzes new drugs coming to market. And it's a role that I still play today as consumer rep. So it's the same committee that in 1991 didn't do their job. And I'm on that committee today, the Psychopharmacologic Drugs Advisory Committee, representing the public. Interesting, you know, I now look back and go, huh, God, you must see things that obviously I never did. But having spent my entire career in advertising and marketing, and always thought I could, you know, there'd be something better to do than just advertising, what I realized is that has helped me also see, you know, the lens in which I see the pharmaceutical work and the marketing and the power of the marketing, you know, being used to sell hope and fear. And then I also then have the other side, which is the advocacy side and the litigation, and saw how, you know, the companies often keep things from you and I.
So you were able to see firsthand government agencies being captured by the pharmaceutical company. They come out of the pharmaceutical world and they go right into the FDA, the CDC. Talk about that.
Yeah, you know, that was something that I was involved in. Again, my experience or knowledge of this before Woody died, it was just, I would never have questioned. I would have always trusted, like, of course the government has our best interests, right? Of course the FDA has our best interests. Of course the CDC. But when I started to learn about this concept of the revolving door, it was during the litigation in my lawsuit. Pfizer had placed the chief medical or the chief counsel for the FDA that did not have to have congressional approval. He was able to just be appointed by the president. He received, his name's Dan Troy, he received $300,000 from Pfizer before he took that role. And once he was inside the FDA, he knew how to intervene in all these private lawsuits that victims had against the companies. But Dan Troy, the chief counsel at the FDA, ultimately went on to become the global chief counsel for GlaxoSmithKline. And so these guys, you know, go from one company to inside the government, into a regulator, into, you know, even Congress. You know, most recently we had Scott Gottlieb. He was our FDA commissioner, resigned, and he's a young guy. I've met him before. He's, you know, not much old, or about my age. And all of a sudden he's like, I'm going to retire. And I was like, no, he's going somewhere. Mark my words. And sure enough, he, right before the, like around the time of the pandemic and Pfizer with the vaccine, he went on to Pfizer's board. And so this is a game that is happening, and it's happening at a scale that is so large that the average person, we don't know, we don't try. It almost seems unbelievable. I know it seemed unbelievable to me. And yet this corruption is at every level, and it's you and I that pay the price for it.
Yeah. So what does your advocacy work look like today?
So my today involvement is I'm still on the FDA Psychopharmacologic Drug Advisory Committee as consumer rep. I'm also very outspoken about how drugs are coming to market because they're using all these fast-tracking mechanisms that are not being tested on that many people. And, you know, I still am in advertising. So I understand the game of advertising and marketing. And we are one of the only two countries in the world that allow drug ads. And so that plays a huge part when knowing that companies can use the regulations that have been put in place by Congress that basically allows them to fast track, meaning if you start looking at a lot of drugs that are on the market or coming to market, everything's for an unmet need. And meaning that there's no other product on the market for that or has been FDA approved. So they're able to fast track it, meaning not the all, you know, the typical, what we thought was the gold standard of, you know, replicated double blinded placebo controlled trials. And you see that things are being fast tracked and it's really all about how to get the drug on the market today fast. And so I still am out speaking on that. I'm working on, you know, doing a lot of podcasts and speaking to med schools, because one of the things that I have found shocking, and this I discovered a long time ago, right, you know, after Woody died, is that doctors aren't taught about how the FDA works. And so that is really one of the things that I'm doing a lot today, is actually speaking to med schools and talking about the FDA process. And as I call it, the how an accidental advocate discovers America's broken drug safety system. And it talks about how drugs come to market fast through the FDA and all these fast tracking mechanisms, to what does approval really look like? And what does the data, and what are the things that you may not know, doctor, because you have not learned about ghostwriting, and and the use of ghostwriting, where the companies are actually writing the medical journals, but finding doctors to put their names on the articles so it looks like it was written by a doctor, but it was actually written by the company. So I'm using all of the elements of, as Woody used to tell me, Kim, if you want to get to the bottom of anything, you always have to follow the money. And so that is really what I have done in creating the talk that I now give. It's called Selling Sickness, and how an accidental advocate has discovered America's broken drug safety system. And it's connecting, it's like you and me, patient, doctor, in the middle of this spider web. And the spider web is where pharma's influence is on every aspect of medicines, from the academic institutions to marketing and advertising to our, the CDC, our Congress, to journals, medical journals that are being written or controlled by the monies. And money is really, again, follow the money. And that was really what helped me put together the spider web. And so that's really my goal, is to help educate people and our physicians, because we need our physicians. We need it to be partners, and we need them to be asking critical questions. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it is about educating you and I, the average person, because we're the ones that are, taking these medications, and we need to be able to ask questions, push back, and question what we've been told. And we have to remember that there is power in information and challenge, and really questioning the blind faith that we've put into a system. And I no longer put that my faith in there, in the system. I put my faith in God, something I can't see. That is a faith that I know I can rely on. The other faith, I learned the hard way that I need to have my eyes open and question things.
You've been listening to part two of Mark and Friends with Kim Witzek. I'm your host, Donna Leland. Thanks so much for listening. All of our programs are archived on our website. Mark and Friends is a ministry of Great News Media and the WLUJ family of stations. Have a great day.